Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
Oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to give their attention, for the court is now sitting.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Anthony Adragna.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
In the middle of a busy spring session, this week the Supreme Court heard arguments on two energy and environmental cases. Today I check in with Politico's Alex Guillen and Kelsey Tamburino on the proceedings. It's Thursday, April 29th. Much of America was paying close attention to the Supreme Court today over another case that involved a teenage cheerleader and Snapchat. But Alex Guillen, you were watching a different case.
We will hear argument next in case 19-1039, Penn East Pipeline versus New Jersey.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
Tell us about the pipeline at the heart of it.
Yeah, so the Supreme Court heard a case here on Wednesday. It was basically brought up because of this pipeline that they want to build to carry natural gas between Pennsylvania and New Jersey. It's called Penn East. Very creative name. And what happened was FERC approved the pipeline. It went through the whole normal process, right? But then Penn East went to use eminent domain authority to seize some state-owned land in New Jersey. And New Jersey objected. They said, look, we have this 11th Amendment protection. This amendment, which was passed in the early 1790s, says that states can't be forced into federal court basically by private entities like companies or citizens. Now, Penn East is pushing back on that. It argues, number one, that it's not really suing New Jersey. It's suing New Jersey's property. It's suing the land. So basically, that's the controversy. That's where we're at.
Yeah. So what has the energy industry itself said about what it considers the stakes of this fight?
It's saying there are big stakes. For one thing, it raises a lot of issues because often rivers and waterways that form many state boundaries are owned by those states already. Justice Amy Coney Barrett also sort of raised this question.
In your view, would there be anything to stop you or any other state from waiting until FERC approves the pipeline's route and then purchasing a property interest in land within the pipeline's path and then asserting state sovereign immunity?
The lawyer for New Jersey said technically there wouldn't be anything to stop that, but it's not the kind of thing states have ever done in the past.
No. I just asked if there's anything formally to stop.
No.
Thank you.
Do you have a sense as to which way the justices are leaning at the close of arguments?
You know, it's hard to say. I will admit I'm not an eminent domain expert. It can be hard to say. This is the kind of case that I think won't necessarily break down along the normal ideological lines that we think of. If I were forced to make a choice, I think there's good reason to think that they could rule in favor of New Jersey. Especially because there was plenty of assurances from the state of New Jersey that any of the potential negative consequences of such a ruling could easily be addressed by Congress by passing new legislation to fix those sort of problems while keeping the 11th Amendment protections in place.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, oyez, oyez.
We will hear argument first this morning in case 2472, Holly Frontier Cheyenne Refining versus Renewable Fuels Association.
Okay, Kelsey, let's start with the basics here. What is the background of this case that made it to the Supreme Court this week?
So basically, the Clean Air Act says that renewable fuels like ethanol from corn have to be blended into transportation fuel at certain increasing levels that are set by year under this program. So under that, small refiners, they can ask EPA to exempt them from those biofuel blending requirements under certain circumstances. For example, if they can prove an economic hardship. The case that the Supreme Court heard on Tuesday surrounds a challenge to a decision out of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, where refiners requested an exemption because of that economic hardship for the 2016-2017 renewable fuel standard compliance years. In that case, the 10th Circuit decided that only the refineries that had received continuous uninterrupted exemptions since 2011 should be eligible for new exemptions. The 10th Circuit, in doing this, ultimately kind of adopted the view, which is supported by biofuel groups and the Biden administration in this case, that small refineries should basically be funneled into compliance over time. And that's really the backdrop of what the Supreme Court heard.
So you listened to the arguments on Tuesday. How did they go? And do you have any sort of read on which way the justices were leaning?
The refiners say that under the rationale given by the 10th Circuit, only a handful of small refiners would qualify for the status that would allow them to get these exemptions. So on Tuesday, the Biden administration argued that the whole point of the RFS program, as set out by Congress, is designed so that these exemptions may be limited over time so that refiners would eventually be forced to meet the program. So the crux here is whether Congress sought to make these exemptions a safety valve, as refiners said, or a funnel, as the Biden administration and biofuel producers argued. And the justices seemed skeptical of the refiners' argument.
Under your reading, which extend means to grant, you know, you extend an offer or extend condolences, could an entirely new refinery apply for an extension to it?
But I think the other notable thing that we saw on Tuesday was that there were a few conservative justices that latched onto this idea that refiners would be put out of business under the interpretation backed by the administration and by biofuels groups. So, you know, that's some of the dynamics at play. It'll be interesting to see how the justices come down on this. We're not expecting a decision until later this summer, but there's a lot of implications here.
Also this week, on the other side of First Street, the Senate used its power to undo a controversial rollback from the Trump administration. Under Trump, the EPA changed course from the Obama administration's restrictions on methane, a greenhouse gas about 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide.
Cutting methane emissions will help curb immediate global warming, save lives, prevent costly trips to emergency rooms, and show the world that the United States is ready once again to be the leader in combating the climate crisis.
But on Wednesday, Senate Democrats used their power under the Congressional Review Act to undo that decision.
Methane, as my colleagues will tell you, is one of the most poisonous things we can put in our atmosphere.
Under that statute, they did not need a 60-vote minimum, but they did get support from three Republicans. The vote to restore the Obama-era regulations on methane was the first climate change vote of this new Congress. It follows a bipartisan agreement from late 2020 to phase out hydrofluorocarbons, another powerful greenhouse gas commonly used in refrigeration. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you like our show, then like it. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It helps more people find our show. I'm Anthony Dragna. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Chevron is lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations, exploring renewable fuels of the future, and investing in low-carbon technologies. Because it's only human to protect the home we share. Learn more at chevron.com/lowercarbon.